The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, as every week, we're working hard to get you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. This is question and answer week on Real Life Real Estate, which means there is no show without you. Now I'm trying to spell show in my head and see if there's really a U in it, and there's not. There's no show without O or U. Any kind of question that you have about real estate investing is fair game this evening. You just have to actually get it over here so that I can answer it. How do you get it over here? Well, you can call 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658, or you can send it via email to vinaradio@gmail.com. That's V like in Victor, E-N-A, radio, spelled like radio, @gmail.com. Questions about finding deals, financing them, the market, renting them, flipping them, creative finance, whatever has been bugging you. At 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. It was really awesome to see so many of you. I guess it's been going on 2 weeks ago now at the National Real Estate Summit. Of 627 people walked through that door, and I don't think I got to meet nearly everybody, but those of you who have been around and calling and sitting in questions for ages and ages, it was good to see you in person. It was such a wonderful event. There was so much camaraderie and people helping people and learning. It was amazing. If you want to put it on your calendar for next year, so that next year when we have that listener special, you don't go, oh man, I already made plans for that weekend. It is November the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th of 2026. So just, I'll give you a minute. Get out your calendar. November 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. The 2026 National Summit. And there's no excuse this year, this upcoming year, about, oh, it's Halloween. I have to take my kids out trick-or-treating. Oh my gosh, and the Youth Academy. Oh, it was amazing. We had a brand new instructor for the Youth Academy, and he taught 8th through 12th graders about everything that you can think of about money, capitalism, the effect of compound interest, taxes, all that kind of stuff. And I sat in on a bit of it, couldn't be in the whole time, but I mean, he had those kids engaged, even the ones, you know, like the emo teens who don't want to, they just want to like sit there with their arms crossed and stare at you. Even they were engaged, and he was giving these demonstrations. I will never forget his demonstration about the tax effects on your investing. It involved a bucket of water and a siphon, and the kid was trying to put in water, but it was getting drained out almost as fast as it was so good. And I'm hoping to talk him into doing it again next year. So hopefully you can bring your 8th to 12th grader to the Youth Academy in 2026. What's coming up in the real estate investing world? Well, next week is the last national online chapter meeting of the year, because the next one would fall like practically on Christmas. for Cincinnati RIA. And if you just want to have a good time, if you just want to have some, hear some stories and learn some stuff, you're going to want to sign up for this meeting. It is the Best and Worst Deals of the Year contest. Members will be competing for the top prize in four categories: Best Deal of the Year, Best Deal by a New Investor, Most Creative Deal of the Year, and Worst Deal of the Year, which is actually usually the hardest fought one. People who had a really bad deal, they at least want to get like a plaque out of it at the end of the year. Who wins? Well, that's voted on by who's there. So there's always some really good lessons there, things I did right, things I did wrong, things that are different in this market. You can get your Zoom seat at CincinnatiRIA.com. That's CincinnatiRIA.com. And join us next Thursday. It's not tomorrow. It's Thursday a week for the Best and Worst Deals of the Year contest, National Edition. This is the first time we've ever done it online so that members from all over the country can go ahead and both vote and also compete with that. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. When we get back, we will get to your questions here on Question and Answer Week at 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. It's Question and Answer Week here on Real Life Real Estate Investing. And we generally intake those questions in one of two ways: by phone at 877-772-9658 or via email at vinaradio@gmail.com. I have a question here from Steve in Lexington. Yes, Lexington, Kentucky. He says, my question relates to a rental property that I own and I'm putting on the market through normal media channels, ZillowApartments.com and their affiliates, Realtor.com, Facebook Marketplace. The house is at and gives me an address, and I'm thinking of listing it for about $3,200 a month. I am doing comps through Rent-O-Meter, Realtor.com, and so on. It is a 2,900 square foot, two-story with a large walkout basement, four bedrooms, three and a half baths, bonus room, granite countertops, well, sounds like a nice place, two-car extended garage in an upscale neighborhood. However, I was able to get $2,800 previously, but Rent-O-Meter is coming back low due to lack of data and am in the middle of other comps within a mile. So I have two questions. The Zestimate is $425,000. They have the house at less square feet than actually exists because I finished off the basement and added 800 square feet. I'm wondering if correcting Zillow's estimate by editing the website facts would trigger a recalculation by the city. Okay. No. The city does not go to Zillow to try and figure out what your house is worth. They do their own mysterious set of numbers every few years to decide, or when the house sells. You know, the taxes will change when the house sells, but you're not selling, you're renting. I'm not sure that this is important at all to what someone is going to want to pay you for rent, but no, going to Zillow and correcting the numbers is not going to trigger a recalculation of your taxes. However, you should be aware that the 800 square feet that you added to your basement that's not actually, for appraisal purposes, 800 extra square feet. The appraisers are no longer permitted to count underground square footage. And there's like some ticky-tacky rules, like any part of the basement that is more than 6 feet underground cannot be counted. But if it's above 6 feet underground, it can. But it has to have a walkout, blah, 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 blah. That took a lot of people by surprise 2 years ago when that rule was... It was a rule because when I was taking my classes to be a real estate agent back in the 80s and 90s, that was the rule. But then the rule relaxed, but then Fannie Mae kind of brought it back about 2 years ago, and all of a sudden people were freaking out because their houses wouldn't appraise because the house next door, which had 2,000 square feet above ground, could no longer be used as a comp for their house, which was 1,200 feet above ground and 800 feet below ground. And they were so used to, but there's four bedrooms. Nope, one of them's underground. It doesn't count. Now, does that extra square footage have value? Of course it does. your 2,000 square foot above ground and 800 below ground is worth more than the one next door that's 2,000 above ground and none below ground. But from a, like, I wouldn't be going in there necessarily correcting the price, because I wouldn't want to mislead any future buyers about how much above ground square footage there actually was. Sorry, I got into the weeds on that, because, as I said, I'm not sure that really has anything to do with what somebody's going to pay you to rent it. So the next question is, there any other way to get data for rent comps? So other than going to active rent listings in different places, and then some of these websites like the one you mentioned that tracks what asking rents were and also does a good job usually of tracking this was an apartment, this was a house, this was a two-family, this one had this size yard, this one had that size yard. So like pretty solid comps. There's no magic way to do that. You've got to look for what is for rent and what was for rent that has rented, which actually doesn't necessarily mean that's what it rented for. That's something that I think not everybody gets about these rent comp things, is that what happens is, so I put my home up for rent. It's on whatever sites. These companies scrape the sites. So they see that I was asking $1,495 and then they see that it went off the market. What they don't see is that it was at $1,495 for 6 weeks, and then a really good applicant came to me and said, I love the house, I'll give you $1,395. And I said, yes. They don't see that because they never see the online price drop. They just see it go offline. There aren't any places to get data other than the ones that you have already mentioned. You are seeing a problem that is market driven. And the problem that is market driven is that we have extremely low vacancy rates in single family homes right now, which means not a lot is going up for rent. It means not a lot of people are moving. I'm hearing people say and reading statistics that say that renters, particularly in single family homes, are staying for kind of historically long times because it is now cheaper to rent than it is to buy. If they like the place they're living, going out and trying to find something else in the market is really, really tough. And the chances that they're going to get rent similar to what they're paying right now is not great, because, you know, in all of this, oh, rents have gone up 1,000% in every city in the United States, we were reading during the pandemic. What nobody was talking about was that people who were in houses that they had been in since before the pandemic were not paying 17% more rent. Like, owners don't usually raise the rents to market on tenants that are paying on time and keeping the property up. So yes, new asking rents went up that much, but nobody who's still living in the properties rents actually went up that much. So we've got this combination of like lack of data and then people not being able to move because they can't find a place to move to because nobody's moving. It was like the same way that the sale market was stuck in 2022 and 2023, the rental market is now stuck. Your third question, what other avenues would you suggest to get the word out? Is the problem, I'm not clear on whether you already put this on the market or that you're just thinking about putting it on the market. I think one of the most effective ways to advertise a rental is actually a sign in front of the rental. They're like, a lot of people overlook that. And the thing is, if their friends live in the neighborhood, if their relatives live in the neighborhood, heck, if they live in the neighborhood and their house has gotten too big or too small for them, they are way more likely to see your for rent sign than they are to find you on one of these other locations. So if the problem is that you have put it on the market and not enough people are calling, that in itself is probably a sign that your rent is too high. If lots of people are calling, but no one's coming to see the property, you've either got bad follow-up systems or your rent is too high. If people are coming to see it, but they're not applying, there's either some defect in the condition of the property or your rent is too high. So I and everybody else you know are having the same problem about what is this thing worth? You know, honestly, you said you got $2,800 previously and you're thinking about listing for $3,200. The other thing you need to know is rents aren't going up a whole lot. So if that $2,800 tenant had been there for 5 years, yeah, you probably can get $3,200. But if that was your tenant that you got last year, I definitely would not bet on $3,200. But this is my strategy on these things. I make my best guess. Obviously, I don't want to under rent the unit. I put it on the market at that price in every single thing you talked about. Every place you talked about, multiple internal and external pictures, because that's people are shopping the pictures at this point. Nice description, nice benefits, you know, not just it's a four bedroom, but it's a spacious four bedroom with baths for everybody, you know, like a nice description, like you were selling the house. And if within 2 weeks, we do not have applications from qualified people, I start dropping the rent. If we're getting lots of applications, but they're all from people who could not possibly, they're obviously just desperate to move. They're being evicted. They don't make enough money to even consider paying that much rent. So they're having trouble finding things and they're just throwing out applications, hoping somebody won't check the application. If they lie on their application, anything like that, that tells me it is not priced to attract the qualified renters who are out there. So I start lowering the rent. And if I were starting at $3,200, I would probably be lowering it in like $100 increments. That's a lot. Most of my properties don't rent for that much. I might be renting for like $1,495. And my next drop might be to $1,445. And then it might be to $1,425. But you've got a much more expensive unit here than most of the stuff I have. So, yep. Just another thing about the market, you know, like people aren't buying, so they're renting, and a lot of rental properties got sold off during that whole bubble in 2021 where the government was simultaneously denying us the ability to evict people who weren't paying us. And also inflating the dollar a lot. So it just became so super easy to just sell your property to a desperate homeowner that a lot of rental properties got sold off and now there aren't enough. Shocking how that works. So everybody's just, you know, following the strategy that works right now, and that is it. So appreciate your question. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. It is question and answer week, 877-772-9658 if you want to call in with your question, or just send it to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. It's question and answer week. There's no guest today. You're the guest today. Have questions, call them in at 877-772-9658 or send them over to vinaradio@gmail.com, which appears to be the preferred method of getting questions over here. Maybe I'm just too scary to talk to. Question from Beth, who does not identify where she is from. She says, thank you in advance for taking your time to answer my question. I appreciate it. I know there are a bunch of ways to buy or acquire real estate, but at this point, I'm interested in learning three things. Number one, wholesaling and flipping land. Number two, learning how to invest in tax liens. Number three, where I can find a list of the different ways and then learn how to. That's an interesting set of preferences there, Beth, because, of course, wholesaling or flipping land is going to be like a low upfront investment. quick cash, high taxed, right? Only one paycheck kind of investment. And then tax liens is going to be one where you actually spend money, get a return on that money at whatever the state's annual return for tax liens is, which, I mean, that varies a lot state to state. Or if you don't get that return, then after some period of time ranging from like 1 to 2 years, depending on the state, you then go spend money on a foreclosure. And you foreclose on the property and either get the property or hopefully get the your money back plus the interest you were expecting. So as I don't usually see those two things mentioned in the same breath as when somebody is saying, I want to do one of these two things. And the question is about how to learn about those things. And I would say, Beth, there's great courses on wholesaling, great courses on flipping land. We've got a number of shows in the archive at reallifereallestate.com from people who do that. Same thing with tax liens. How would you pick amongst those courses? Well, here's how I would do it. I would go to my RIA group and I would ask around. It is so much the case that there are some people out there who are very convincing and they're huge influencers and they've got millions of followers, and I wouldn't use their courses to line my birdcage. And then there's other people who, like, they're really quiet and they don't really go around and talk about themselves very much, and they've got amazing courses. So the internet's like a dangerous place to go spend a lot of money on real estate education. I would go to your local group. I would talk to the people who are actually successfully doing the thing. I would get a lot of my information from them, but you can't ask somebody to teach you how to do tax liens because you met them at a real estate association. I would say, like, who do you like? Who do you follow? Who do you think is really good? Having that vetted education is super important in the market today. Now, on this, how do I find the list of different ways and then learn how to? That, again, probably should be your real estate association. A lot of associations have a real estate 101 type class that they teach once a year that's more like, it's not, let's do a deep dive into a single thing. It's like, here's all the ways that you can do things and here's the pros and cons of them. And just talking to people at the group, you know, what do you do? What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? What does it give you? What do you have to do to get it? We'll go a long way. And going to the meetings. I mean, every meeting has a different topic, right? So that would be the advice that I would give you, Beth. I will also give you this advice. It doesn't matter what you decide to do. At least 70% of every strategy requires the same set of things. Like you have to know, how do I source deals? You have to know, how do I appraise a property? You have to know, what contracts do I use to actually put a property under contract? How do I make an offer? Like, what do I say to people? What's the negotiation strategy with sellers? How do I estimate repair costs? Like, all of those things are common to every strategy. So I think it would be good to focus on learning those as you are also thinking about, and then what do I want to do? Do I want to flip them, rent them, buy tax liens, whatever. So there you go. All right, let's go to line one and talk to Francis in, I assume, California, not Canada. Francis, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This question relates to what you were just talking about, real estate education. Mm-hmm. I'm not just starting, but I would like to hire a real estate coach, but like you mentioned, there's a lot of influencers out there. And so what do you think is the best way for someone to find a legitimate real estate coach that you're willing to pay a fee to help me find a new strategy to get me to a point where I can eventually leave my W-2 job?
What a wonderful question. and I say that because so many people, they will walk into a real estate association and the first question they will ask is, where can I get a mentor? And by mentor, what they mean is somebody who's going to kind of hold their hands through everything that's going to happen with them in the next, you know, weeks or months as they start their real estate career, and who will do that for the good feeling of having helped someone. So your question about how do I'm not that person. I'm someone who's already done some stuff, and I know what I'm trying to figure out. I know that I'm just trying to figure out how to get to the next step, and how do I find somebody that the money I give them is worth it?
is a
very refreshing mm-hmm. question. So do you have any idea, when you say next step, are you talking about next strategy or scaling the one you're already doing?
It would be the next strategy, because mm-hmm. the one I am using now is a few single family rental properties, and that doesn't seem like a strategy that I want to continue with.
Okay. Why is that?
In my area, in the California area, it seems more challenging than in other areas.
Well, yes, because it's hard to buy properties in California that will actually cash flow.
Right.
The prices versus the rents are out of whack.
Yeah. And I'm looking for a completely new strategy. I want someone to help me, like, find that strategy and then teach me.
Uh-huh. I think that's going to be two different. I think that's going to be two different people.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, because there are very few. No matter what they say, there are very few coaches who can talk intelligently about, okay, here are all your options, Francis. You know, I think the things that might fit you would be commercial properties, tax liens, notes. Like, they can't talk about all of those things intelligently. You understand what I'm saying? Like, they'll have one or two favorites, and they'll be like, oh, go do this, and I can teach you how to do this. So I think this first person might be more along the lines of just a personal coach who's gonna go through and ask you the kinds of questions I was just asking you. And if we weren't on the air, I would ask you a lot more. You know, I'd be asking you questions like, well, you said you want to quit your job. How much passive income do you have to quit your job? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to relocate? Are you willing mm-hmm. to relocate your investments? Because there's a lot mm-hmm. of folks in California who invest here in Ohio because you can buy like five houses for what you can buy one house for in California, and if that's the case, are you going to feel comfortable with having a ground partner or person who, because like some people are just like, no, if I can't drive by my properties, I don't want to own them. So I would be asking you all of those sorts of questions to sort of narrow it down to, well, for what you're trying to do, if you are going to continue to live where you're living, mm-hmm. these are four or five you should look at, and you go look at those four or five and start talking to people who are doing them and see if they're things that you've got the risk tolerance for, that you've got the resources for, and then let's reconvene again. And then I would say, okay, you decided commercial properties. Here's where I would send you to learn about commercial properties.
Okay, so where would I find the first coach?
Oh gosh, there's do you belong to a real estate association?
I do locally. I started going again mm-hmm. recently,
mm-hmm.
But it just seems somewhat hard to vet people.
Okay, but the personal coach part is gonna be the easier of the two things, because my concern for you right now is, you don't know what you want, and you know what you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what the goal is. The goal is.
Don't know how to get there. Yes.
Yeah, but you don't know which strategy or strategies might most easily lead you to that, and that makes you a little bit subject to a really good convincing sales pitch.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I know that.
Like if I said, oh, Francis, listen, just call me after because I've got the perfect thing for you. It's going to do exactly what you want. You're going to be able to quit your job within 6 months. It's like no work. Don't even worry about the work part. You're going to entirely use other people's money or I'll even fund the deals for you. And it's only going to be $10,000. You're going to be like, where do I write that check?
I know. I'm susceptible to that.
Mm-hmm. So the reason I asked you about whether you belong to a local association is because what I have found is that within most local associations, there are at least two or three or four people who actually are like certified personal coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that expensive to get personal coaching.
Okay.
Like you might pay a couple hundred bucks an hour. You might pay, it's $1,000 for 10 sessions over 10 weeks, that sort of thing. But you still want to interview the coach. You know, this is what I am looking to figure out. And I need to know how you think you could take me from here to there. I'm not asking you to find my strategy for me. I'm asking you to walk me through the process of making some serious decisions here about what I am willing to do, what I am not willing to do, what I'm willing to give up. I mean, do you have a really super good handle on, if I said, how much do you need to make really, really, really to be able to walk away from that job? Could you give me a number? Or would you have to sit down and say?
Yeah, I'd probably want to, sit down and think about it. Cause I know there's the logical number, but then there's the dreamer number.
Yeah.
So,
and a lot of people when
they're, and I don't want to set my limits too low.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people when they start thinking about, what do I need to quit my job? They leave out things that a third party would be able to bring up. For instance, like I would say, what are you going to do about health insurance?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And are you fully vested in your 401k and will you be able to roll that over and use it for investing? And I would say, now there's also some things you're spending money on right now that you wouldn't be spending money on if you didn't go to work every day.
Mm-hmm.
Your wardrobe would probably be cheaper. Your dry cleaning bill would drop to zero. Right? Like there's, you got to look at all of
personal
these
income
things.
Tax would
Bingo.
Be a lot less.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. So
okay, so it's two separate coaches. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the first one is the one who works with Frances to figure out what she really wants to be when she grows up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is the person who works with Frances to teach her the things she decides she needs to do. And it might be, honestly, it might be more than one thing. Most people, in order to live without a job, have to have a cash strategy and a longer term, like passive cash flow strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and sometimes those are within the same category, right? People flip houses and also rent houses, or they flip notes and also keep notes. So they might be within the same asset class, but most people, I mean, to get to the point where like my passive income is always going to cover all of my expenses for the whole rest of my life without me having to sell any of my assets, that is a multi-year journey for most people. So how do they live in the meantime? They're flipping some stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. It sounds like someone needs to just ask me, or I need to ask myself the right questions for the first part of that.
Sometimes it takes a third party to make sure you're asking all the right questions.
Yeah. And I'm willing to pay someone to do that. I just wanted to ask that question to get some clarity, but this has been helpful. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call, Francis, and good luck with that journey that you are about to embark on. It's Real Life Real Estate Investing. It's question and answer week. I think we need to take one more quick break. And if you have a question, and you can call in real quick at 877-772-9658 or send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. We'll try and get that in for you before the end of the show. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. It's question and answer week. And just kind of rolling through the questions that are in the email at vinaradio@gmail.com. When I sent out my weekly e-letter today, I asked a question about whether folks thought there was a need for an a basic economics for real estate investors kind of class, where we literally talked about fiat currency, asset-backed currency, inflation, how inflation affects prices and rents, you know, that sort of thing, and then moving on to understanding credit and leverage and macroeconomics versus the real estate market. I kind of outlined like 8 modules for it, and I asked if anybody actually saw enough value in that they would show up week after week for that class for 8 or possibly 10 weeks, and if they would pay a small amount of money for it. And I have forgotten that I had sent that question, and my inbox filled up with, yes, I think that sounds great, we should definitely do that. And so I'm having to search for the questions amongst all the people saying that they would like to have that economics for real estate investing class. So here's a quick down and dirty question from Joel. Where did you get your first funding to buy properties? Private lenders and loan assumptions, which is what we would today call a subject to. They were slightly different, but not terribly different. And asking owners to do things like carry back financing when they had a paid off property. Because like everybody else, well, like not everybody, there's a lot of people actually start in real estate when they are more established than I was at 23 and have the ability to go to the bank and put down a down payment and all that stuff. But I didn't have the ability to do that for like 5 years after I got into real estate. No one told me that I was too new to do all that stuff and that no one would want to do it for me. And so I just went out and made those offers, and that was how I bought those properties. His second half of his question is, where do you get your funding to buy properties now? Private lending, subject to owner financing. Not a whole bunch has changed in 30 years, Joel. I learned how to do that early on. Oh, partners. I've added partners to that mix. I was taught at a young age never to have partners. And I get it. I understand why. My father was very much against co-owning properties with people, but I also discovered during the 2007 to 2009 or 10 real estate crash in Ohio that there were lots and lots and lots and lots of properties available for people who knew how to put them together and do the deals and appraise them when there were no comps and rent them out and, you know, get good renters because you knew how to figure out if somebody was going to be a good renter. And there was also money, but not in the same place. There were people who knew how to do the deals and people who had money, and they weren't the same people. So that was when I started actually partnering with people as opposed to just, it's not that I don't get private loans. I do get private loans, but for some people, partnering is better because what they actually need tax breaks and whatnot. And I learned over the years why my dad said don't partner, but I also learned over the years how to like interview partners and date them instead of just like jumping right into marriage with them. So I do a lot more partnering now than I did at the beginning, but otherwise it's the same. And can I get a bank loan now? Yeah. Do I want to get a bank loan now? No. And the reason is that the amount of effort that it takes for me to apply for a bank loan, I just find extremely frustrating. Like when I had five properties and they would all fit on the Fannie Mae form, that worked really well. But now I kill a whole tree every time I want to print out my information for the bank. And then they, you know, I think I'm a pretty proven borrower. I've got lots of loans that I'm paying on, even if they're other people's loans. And last time I got a bank loan, which was going on a year ago, it was a little over a year ago. It was because I was buying my own house. It took 6 weeks just to get through the application process because the bank kept coming back and wanting more and more information. Why is there a co-insured on this property? Because I took over their loan and they have to be co-insured on the loan. They don't own the house anymore. I do not have a partner in that property. Why does this exist? Why does that exist? And finally, after 6 weeks, I got another set of questions. And I was like, look, do you want to make this loan or not? I clearly make enough money to pay it. The appraisal came in at higher than what I'm paying for this house. I understand y'all want to make sure this is a qualifying mortgage, but you don't need to know how much money I've got in my 401k for that. Like, I've already proven my ability. It was so frustrating. Can you hear the pain in my voice? It still hurts after all this time. Banks are awesome, but there comes a point when they are not so awesome anymore. Actually, this next one is from Cindy in Toledo, and she was actually answering a question that I asked in my e-letter. Thank you, Cindy. I think you were the only person who asked the question. The question was, what is your metric for how you define profitable in a deal? Because everybody in our business has a different metric. Like, I don't want to own anything that I don't get a 30% return on, or I don't cash on cash return. I don't want to own properties that I don't make X dollars per month on. I don't want to do wholesale deals unless I can clear this much money. Like, everybody's got a completely different metric. And Cindy was good enough to share her metric, and I think it's an interesting one. She said, my rentals pay my bills, and I have a legacy to pass on to my kids. My goal is to cash flow at least $1,000 per rental if it's paid off, and $500 per rental if there's a loan. I like a lot of equity, so I aim to be all in at 60% of value, but some are 70%. And this is my current cash flow. For cash in the future, I have a couple of rentals in my IRA, but I'm also doing loans from there as equity sharing. So she's doing equity sharing loans as opposed to normal, like, hard money loans. And for chunks of cash, I rehab and sell because I have a crew of people who can rehab. I don't think there's anything here that everyone else isn't already doing, but right now my plan is really focused on growing my Roth. That's actually a very good, clear answer, especially that first part, Cindy, where you said I want to be in at 70 cents on the dollar, and I want to, I want to know that I've also got cash coming in now and grow my Roth. What is the difference between real estate investors and note investors? Please explain the pros and cons of each type of investor. Oh, they're all very nice people. The quick answer there, Anne, is that note investors are generally in a much more passive business, but their assets lose value as time goes by. Real estate investors like to own bricks, and they generally have to be more involved with those bricks, but their bricks get more valuable as time goes by. If you own a note, the value either goes down or stays the same over time. I am going to have to answer the rest of your questions on some future program because I just realized that we are completely out of time, and I do very much appreciate you sending in the question and to all the folks who asked questions today. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.